Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Presenting Pixie Dust. I'm Elizabeth Carr.
And I'm Brett Harvey.
And it's season four.
Yeah, season four.
I wonder how many of our episodes you start by going, because I reckon it's probably 25% of them.
That's not me. That's our crowd of adoring admirers.
Adoring.
I said adoring. Everyone out there knows what I said.
Yeah.
You guys are adoring.
Yeah, yeah.
You're adorable.
Play back the tape. It's season four. It's very exciting.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
Can you believe that we've been doing this for so long?
It's been a long time coming, you see.
It's been a long time since we've done an episode. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. We were in hiatus.
We were.
It's a nice place. We went on holiday in hiatus.
We did.
For those who know us, we've got a young son, little Christian.
Yep.
And he's growing into a much bigger son now. He's nearly a year old.
However, in growing into a much bigger son, he is his routine is much more predictable now. So yeah. We can...
For all the mothers and fathers out there who listen to the podcast, you know exactly what we're talking about when we say that the kids are the most predictably unpredictable things around.
But genuinely, he is a bit more predictable now, so we can get stuff done now that we probably couldn't have before.
There's my first yeah for the season.
Oh, how exciting. We've missed it. How everyone at home has missed it.
And there's another thing as well we need to tell people.
What do we need to tell them?
Well, those who tune in regularly would know that we lost a dear family member last year.
We did.
Our dog, Buddy.
Yes.
And I had him for 17 years, so it was a massive loss, but...
You know what? Maybe they don't know.
I'm sure we mentioned it. No.
No, we don't. No, oh my goodness. I don't think, because the last episode we did Holes.
Yeah.
A Holes episode with our lovely dear friend Sasha. Shout out to Sasha, because we know you're listening.
Yo.
Buddy was here with us in the studio. He was on the floor.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. He was.
He was in his little bed on the floor.
Yeah. So since then we have, he finally passed on. He'd had a really good life.
A long, beautiful 17-year life.
He was probably our biggest fan, because I reckon he sat there through every episode we recorded.
Yeah, snoring or rooping or panting.
Yeah, farting, whatever. And so, anyway, he's passed on now, and we've got his ashes in a tin. maybe we could do a giveaway. No.
Oh, I'm just God. Kidding. They got dark.
But anyway, we've also welcomed a new family member, which is our beautiful little spoodle puppy. And what's his name, honey?
His name's Sunny.
Sunny.
And Sunny was in the studio with us, but we've since banned him because he wouldn't stop running around and making a whole lot of noise. So he's probably tearing the house down at the moment, but he's quiet.
He was like a child that's just been given a whole bunch of sugar.
Yeah, he had the zoomies in the studio, and the studio is just not built for that. So he's outside.
Yeah, so big things.
So now you're all caught up on our life. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Holidays to whatever you celebrate. We are ready to get back into it.
Yeah.
Ready for our second year of the season.
I've got to catch up.
Woo! We are up to an episode that's actually been a long time coming. We watched this movie quite a long time ago. This was a Brett Harvey request.
I think this was pre-Christmas, wasn't it?
Oh, it was absolutely pre-Christmas.
Yeah, it might have even been November.
It could have been. It's been a long time, but we have seen it before. Like, it was a rewatch.
Yeah, we love this. It's a great movie. We saw this at the movies.
We did. So we are talking about the movie live-action spectacular Jungle Cruise.
Yeah.
Starring The Rock and Emily Blunt. And we did see this one at the movies. I was still pregnant when we saw this at the movies. I think this was the last thing that we saw before we put ourselves into self-imposed lockdown before the baby came.
And it was a terrific movie to see at the cinema. You know, spectacular, visually spectacular, great action scenes. And, that says it all. We don't have to do a podcast anymore.
Okay, so thanks for tuning in.
But we went back and watched it. And what was your thoughts the second time around, like just generally?
Look, I reckon we've probably seen it about four times now. Do you think? I think definitely at least three.
I think we had to watch it in two halves.
This time we did.
Because of young Christian.
Yeah, well, it just gets late and I'm old and I'm tired. I just want to go to bed.
You don't have the concentration of a young person.
Oh. And on that note, thanks everybody for tuning in. And no, we saw it at the movies, and then I've watched it, I think, 2 times since then. And then we watched it for recording purposes as well. Do you want to hear what I think now, or do you want to hear what I think at the end?
I just want to generally what you thought.
I think the first time I saw it, I thought it was great.
Yep.
Yeah.
And this most recent time?
I thought it was long. It felt long.
It's quite a long movie, I think.
And we'll get to that with my stats. But I think that the first time I saw it when we were at the movies, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I thought it was good. And then I think every time I've seen it since then, I've enjoyed it a little bit less.
Yeah.
Maybe it hasn't grown on me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I noticed different things.
Okay.
You know, on the subsequent watchings, subsequent viewings.
Yeah.
It's still a pretty good movie.
It's fine.
It stacks up.
It's okay.
Yeah, there's some endearing characters, some good fun dialogue. And yeah. Well, we'll get into that in a minute.
Well, shall we start the fun facts and the stats?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, there we go. There's number 3. We had a 3.5 there. All right. This movie, The Jungle Cruise, premiered. Oh, it's not even The Jungle Cruise. It's just Jungle Cruise.
Mm.
Jungle Cruise premiered on July 24th, 2021 at Disneyland Resort.
Right in the middle of COVID.
Yeah. Well, it was sort of, you know, people had different ways of dealing with the pandemic, but it was 2021. They had pushed this back.
Yeah,
do you remember that it was meant to come out in 2020 and then the pandemic hit, and they wanted a theatrical release for this because it would have cost them an absolute fortune.
Mm.
I didn't write down the budget for this movie, but I'm sure it was pretty big. And they wanted a theatrical release for it. They didn't want to put it straight to streaming like they did with a bunch of other movies.
Yeah.
Okay. Mulan went straight. I think Mulan premiered, but it was only out for like a week or two before
Encanto,
everything.
Straight to Disney Plus, I think.
Did it? Yes, I think it might have.
I think they attempted cinemas.
I think at the moment that they're doing theatrical and streaming releases very close to each other. We didn't see Encanto at the theatres. We watched it. We watched it on streaming. But this one, normally I would wait, but this one we saw at the cinemas, I think, because they had waited so long to release it. We thought, well, let's go and see it. Premiered at Disneyland Resort, which is quite cute. It has a runtime of 127 minutes, so a little over 2 hours.
Yeah.
And it has a current rating of 6.6 on IMDb and 62% on Rotten Tomatoes.
62%?
Yeah, 62%. Well, that's what it was when I made my notes.
What was IMDb?
6.6.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
Maybe they saw it more than once and it felt long.
Maybe they just don't have, the fondness for Jack Whitehall that we have.
Oh, I love Jack Whitehall. He's the best part of this movie. All right, let's get into some fun facts. Fun fact number 1, like The Haunted Mansion and Pirates of the Caribbean, this film is inspired by a Disneyland ride. Originally called Jungle River, the attraction takes guests on a boat ride through a river that somehow connects the jungles of Africa, Asia, and South America, past animatronic depictions of wild animals. The ride is enhanced by the cast members, or skippers, who pilot the boats and deliver corny jokes like the ones that Frank tells in the film.
A lot of dad jokes.
Yeah.
Daggy dad jokes.
Yeah. That's the best
part
of the
ride. Yeah, it's the charm.
Yeah. If you want a good skipper, if you're going on the ride at Disneyland or Walt Disney World, you want a good skipper. Someone who's got really good timing. So I've been on the ride a few times.
Yep.
We went on it in Disney World.
At Magic Kingdom.
At Magic Kingdom. And I went on twice with... So I went to Disneyland in 2018 with my mum. And we are not riders. We are not thrill seekers. And she's even less of a thrill seeker than me, if you can imagine. But this ride we went on, and it was her favourite. We went on during the Halloween party because the lines were really short. And it was really cool to go on it at night. We went on it twice. We went on it during the day, and then once it had gotten dark as well, we went on it too.
Really?
Yeah. So
there you go.
And she loved it. It is a really nice ride.
It's different from a lot of the other rides too, I think, you know, because of that because of that personal interaction with the skipper.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you can see why it was worthy of a movie.
Mm-hmm. All right, fun fact number two. Sorry, I didn't know where to go with that.
Also, what we know about Walt, you know, in the creation of the parks as well, that one of his visions was to have the opportunity for people to have a boat ride in the park, you know.
Well, you can have two boat rides in the park. Three, actually, I think.
Not just view, like, the animals from around the world or Africa or wherever, the savannah, but to sort of be immersed right into it. And so the boat ride was the way to go. But constructing it was really difficult.
There's a great episode on, is it Behind the Attraction?
Yeah.
On Disney Plus that talks about the construction of this ride. And what they had to go through to make a river. They had to dig out a river because there's not a naturally occurring river.
And they had to come up with, you know, solutions as to how the boats would be able to travel in a, you know, an orderly way without veering off course or without needing to be steered by someone.
And getting the trees.
No spoilers for people, but the skippers aren't actually driving the boat.
What do you mean?
It's the magic. It's the Disney magic. But it is impressive how they kind of, that's part of the acting, is that they make it kind of seem like they're steering it, but they're not really. But you know, it's all done with track and wheel stuff, which is so clever. They use a lot of track and wheel on a lot of other rides as well, but this one's sort of great because you can't see it at all.
No,
you can't
fully
see
submerged.
The mechanics of how this the boats move along. But it's great, and in the ride too, you get splashed. There's a little bit of water splashing about, and there's a waterfall, and you know, and even the animatronics of the animals for the time were really impressive. Mm. It's a really epic ride to go to, and also, when you're in it, you can't see anything else in the park as well. So you just really feel like it takes you to a place.
Yeah, it's great. Most of my fun facts are actually about the ride and not the movie, but
let's, really?
Yes.
Well, let's mosey
let's
on.
Let's go to number two.
Yeah.
The Jungle Cruise attraction is famous due to the script that the skippers deliver with all of their charm and charisma. There are some trademark jokes and storylines from the Disney park attraction, and to meet fans' expectations, some of these jokes are present in the film adaptation. Most notably, the joke that every Jungle Cruise fan waits for is the backside of water pun, which is delivered toward the end of almost every journey on the Jungle Cruise. I saw a funny, it's got nothing to, actually, well, no, it's sort of half related. At the D23 convention recently, Josh Gad, who does the voice of Olaf in Frozen, and he is LeFou in the live action Beauty and the Beast, which we don't talk about, but, you know, he's Olaf. He got presented with a Disney Legend Award, inducting him into the Disney Legends Hall of Fame, which is, you know, great for him. We love Josh Gad. However, he did make a joke when he was up there, and he dedicated his award to the person who did not hire him to be a skipper on the Jungle Cruise. He really wanted that job and they didn't hire him for it.
Yeah.
And now he's a Disney legend anyway.
There you go.
He would have been a brilliant skipper.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, fun fact number three, the original Jungle Cruise ride opened in Disneyland Anaheim in 1955. It was one of the opening rides, I think.
Yeah.
When the park opened, it was there.
Yeah.
The Disney World version opened in Orlando in 1971.
There you go.
Yeah. Fun fact number four, Disney reopened an updated version of the Jungle Cruise ride at Disneyland in Anaheim, California, 2 weeks before the movie opened, removing depictions of Africans that had been considered racist. The ride in Magic Kingdom at Walt Disney World, Florida, will also receive the same updates. I don't know if you had the same thought that I did when we went on it at Disney World and when I went on Disneyland, but there are moments where you see the depictions of some of the natives, the animatronics of them, and you sort of sit there in the boat and you go, ooh.
Yeah.
That's a bit, you can't do that anymore. You can't show that anymore. It's just outdated cultural depictions.
Yeah.
But those have all been removed now and they have been updated.
Yeah, there you go.
Animatronics. Fun fact number five, eagle-eyed viewers will note that the clothing that Frank Wolf, who is played by The Rock, wears on the boat is extremely similar to what Charlie Allnut wears in The African Queen. So that was the ride was based off that movie, African Queen. Yeah. Not the ride, sorry. This movie was very much based off that very old movie. So it's Humphrey Bogart's character for those who are playing at home. This is intentional, as the Bogart film was a heavy influence on the Jungle Cruise ride at Disneyland. Emily Blunt's character's name is Lily Horton. Her last name is based on Katharine Hepburn's full name, Katharine Horton Hepburn.
There you go.
She is a heavy influence on the movie because she also starred in The African Queen, and there are many similarities between the two. And Katharine Hepburn was famous for wearing pants too, wasn't she?
Yep.
Yeah, when nobody else was doing it, Katharine Hepburn was a trailblazer. I thought this one was really interesting because I noticed these things, and I think that I wrote it down as well in my notes. Fun fact number 6 is that the opening title credits are not shown until 14 minutes and 50 seconds into the film.
Mm.
A long, long time in before we see the opening credits to the film.
Yeah. Why is that?
I don't know. Just it's a choice.
Must have been just
artistic choice.
Yeah. So when was that?
So that is 3 scenes in. So we've established the main characters and the story and
backstory
and the motivations, I suppose, for Lily and McGregor going forward. And then that is 15 minutes. And then we see Jungle Cruise come up on the big screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, fun fact number 7. Jack Whitehall was attracted to the part of Emily Blunt's brother mainly because the character reminded him of his father, who he played alongside in the Netflix travel series, Jack Whitehall Travels with My Father.
Yeah, what a great series that was too.
I think we said that as well when...
Yeah, definitely.
When we were in the cinema watching him, it was like, he's playing his dad.
Yeah.
It's almost exactly his dad.
And for those who haven't seen it, you know, Jack Whitehall's dad... is, like you'd say, a very, like a proper English gentleman.
Yeah.
A modern proper English gentleman. And so he's kind of a bit stiff. He's got a wry comedic personality, but otherwise fairly straight up and down. And we see that in The Travels with My Father. In fact, it's quite, you know, opposites.
It's like The Odd Couple.
And so... I guess in many ways we're expecting Jack Whitehall to be more Jack Whitehall, which is very out there, outgoing, outspoken. But in this, he's more anal retentive, kind of stiff. And the comedy is in his stiffness and lack of flexibility and his high expectations of what should be as opposed to what actually happens.
That's also where his character development comes from as the movie goes on.
Mm.
His ability to let go of his expectations and fears, because a lot of his character is based on fear. And be able to save the day. All right, and fun fact number 8, lucky last, with Jack Whitehall's character McGregor being gay, this marks the second time there is an LGBTQI+ representation in a Disney live action movie, following the example of Josh Gad's character in Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
17.
That's great. And we're seeing more of that too. There's another one, I think we were watching a Disney movie the other day. Was it Raya and the Last Dragon?
No. Well, were you watching? No, it was that other one you were watching about the. Oh, I can't remember what it's called. About the guy who's like a. That's an animated one though. So this is only the second time that
in a live action movie. Yeah,
okay. Oh, what's it called? It's gonna annoy me.
What was it?
It's the new one with the guy whose dad's an explorer.
Yeah, yeah.
People are yelling at their their phones right now. Yeah. Their car stereos.
Oh, with the young fella and he's
Strangeville.
Planet Strange. No, not Strangeville.
Are you sure?
Meet the Strangers. Strange World.
It's some strange things.
Strange.
Anyway.
But whatever it is, and there's one of the characters in that is... and the thing is that they're very clever about it because in... Well, they're clever about it in that they don't actually... state straight up that they're gay. They don't use words like that, but it's inferred by their relationships. And
I think it's
kind of like easing us into it.
I think that the way that they do it now is very clever because, like, even with Jungle Cruise coming out in 2021, the character of McGregor still had to, in inverted commas, come out during the movie, you know. And he doesn't say, I am gay, but he says enough about it that he was expected to marry marry a nice girl and settle down, and he doesn't want to marry a girl. And he very pointedly says that.
Yeah.
And that Lily, his sister, is the only one that stood by him. He's having this conversation with Frank. And that Lily is the only one that stood by him. And so that's why he came with her on this adventure that he didn't otherwise want to come on.
Yeah.
So he still has to come out, whereas in the
strange
world, they're just
they're just two guys interested in each other.
Yeah,
and well, it's accepted by everyone. It's not a you know, it's not an issue. It's just a matter of fact.
Strange world, you were right. I just looked it up.
One to me,
not meet the strangers.
The strangers.
I knew it was strange something.
It sounds like a corny TV sitcom. Meet the strangers.
I thought it was like meet the parents. That was where I was in my head. But yeah.
Anyhow.
Yeah. Okay. So, do you want to start?
Oh, so that's our eight. Well done. We finally got through it. About 20 minutes. No, it's about average for us. Oh, that's good. There's some good facts. Yeah. Good on you.
Thanks.
Good research, honey.
Oh, goodness.
So the thing is, this movie, I think, you know, like you said before, there's a lot of anticipation in the lead up to this movie. I think expectations, you got diehard fans who, you know, absolutely love the ride. There's people who have been on the Jungle Cruises like
their whole lives.
Like hundreds of times, you know, like they just love it. And so you can imagine, you know, the build-up of what this should be. And you can imagine the riders making sure that it does, you know, capture the spirit of the ride.
Not only that, this is a really big-name movie. You know, you've got Dwayne Johnson, you've got Emily Blunt, you've got Jack Whitehall and Paul Giamatti, and these huge names in this movie. This is definitely...
That's where all your budget went to.
Yeah, a big budget, big-name film that you expect... is going to do very well.
What's interesting is, you know, you call it live action, but you know, so much of it...
in front of a green screen.
So much of it is, green screen CGI. Like, the scenery for this movie is great. It's, you know, it's very... It's got a lot of depth of colour and
set in the
movement
Amazon,
and
on
so
the
forth.
Amazon
River.
Yep.
So, you know, that's impressive, although at times it does look a little bit computer generated.
Well, it was filmed in Hawaii, but this movie.
But otherwise, it's
in
quite good. Yeah. But at the same time, you can kind of give it a look, you know, due to the nature of its storyline, you can kind of give it a bit of leeway there as well, because it's, in essence, it's fantasy, you know, that sort of stuff. So, things don't have to adhere to the perfectly to the laws of nature and physics and stuff like that. So, you can give it a bit of leeway and it. But anyway, it's
so
I'm just hit a dead end.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
Done. Move on.
Much like they did many times during this movie.
Yeah.
All right. So we've got like the main plot point of this film is that there is a tree, a magic tree, with magic flowers, petals that grow on the tree. The tree is called the Tears of the Moon, and they're going to Lily, who's our female protagonist in this movie, played by Emily Blunt, is on a mission to go and find this tree because the petals cure any illness and any curse. They will break any curse. They'll cure any illness. They'll just like do a hard reset on whoever eats it, drinks it, whatever. So we do get a little bit of backstory right at the start of the movie that this 400 years ago, Aguirre and the conquistadors are searching for these Tears of the Moon. And
Those pesky Spanish.
We love you, Spanish.
Go around conquering the world.
Yeah, so the conquistadors are searching the Amazon jungles and the river for this tree.
Magic.
And in looking for it, they are cursed and trapped
in the forest, in the jungle, not away from the water. They're trapped
away from the water because the water wakes them up. So they are trapped near the river.
They're not allowed to get too far away from the river.
Yeah, they can't leave the river.
Yep.
So they have to stay near the river. But in sight of the river, I think that's what it was. They have to stay inside of the river, but they are trapped in like a cave. And
they're basically turned to stone.
And they're immortal though. So they're cursed. This curse has been on them that they can't move away from the river, but they also can't die. So they're just there. Yeah.
Yep.
So to get to this magic tree, you need this arrowhead.
Yep.
That Lily has.
Which looks like a heart.
Yeah, it looks like a heart, but yeah.
It's called the Heart of the Moon.
The Heart of the Moon. Tears of the Moon, Heart of the Moon.
Yeah.
So this arrowhead that Lily gets, she steals it from this.
Like scholar society.
Yeah, type it's like thing. A museum yeah. type thing that we were talking about earlier. And she steals it from Prince Joachim? It's funny. So we're laughing.
Joachim.
I'm going to have to play it.
Prince Joachim.
Yeah.
Prince Joachim. who also wants it because he's also searching.
And he's sort of this rich. I don't know if they actually say Russian, but he's kind of. Oh,
German.
German, is it?
German, yeah.
Oh, okay. Is it? That's what they said.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But anyway,
he has a German accent. I don't know that he is German. I don't think they ever specify, but he's definitely
But yeah,
a
something
accent.
Like that maybe. Yeah. And so, but he's, you know, he's rich.
Yes.
And he's cruising around in his little submarine and that later on. And
yeah.
So, you know, this guy's got money, but he wants this kind of like this immortality that goes along with the Heart of the Moon and the, you know,
Tears of the Moon. Yeah, so he also needs this. Lily steals it. She gets gone, and they head to Portovelo in Brazil. To her and her brother McGregor head to Portovelo in Brazil to set off down the river, because she's got this map that's going to take them there, and it's all very, very secret how she's got it, and they're going to go down the river, but they need a skipper to take them.
Dun, dun, dun.
And that is the premise of the story. So that's where we have the opening credits. After we see Frank on the river taking people down there. So he is introduced as the skipper.
Yeah.
And
he's literally just on the tail end of a
he does tours.
Of a cruise that he's So we get that backside of the waterfall and a few other jokes. And he's also set up some kind of like some fake indigenous folk along the banks that can kind of threaten them as part of the show.
Yeah, he's made it a whole show, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's quite funny and, you know, very clever. The action aboard the boat's really clever. I love that, yeah.
There are quite a lot of action scenes in this. I feel like that's what makes this movie so long.
Should be called Action Cruise.
Extended action scenes. So
if you like a bit of action.
Oh my goodness, it's just so much. And I think that maybe that's where I got bored, because it doesn't really move the story. Like, it's cool the first time you see it, because it's like the suspense of, oh my gosh. But then after you know what's going to happen, it's just like, okay, this is taking a really long time.
There's a lot of ebb and flow of, you know, threat, survive, and all the while being action.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Throughout, as she gets along, Lily, who does a lot of talking, she talks a lot.
Yeah.
And she convinces Frank to take her on this down the river, which he agrees to do after he sort of spots that she's got the arrowhead. She's got it tied around her neck with a necklace. So obviously he recognises that this is something that is important, and he understands what she's got. He thinks she's just some other white chick who's come down here trying to find this thing that doesn't exist.
Because
it's just like a myth. Just like, you know, a legend, folklore.
And it's likely too, though, that she's the first female that's come down looking for this thing. Because it tends, I guess, what we're led to believe at the start is that
no one takes her seriously.
Emily Blunt's character as a woman is not taken seriously in the scientific community.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure many men have travelled down there looking for this.
Yeah.
And but
Frank
she's
has
the
taken
first
many
female,
people down on
but
down
she's
the
also
river.
The first person that's got the heart, which is exactly the thing needed to access
Yeah.
This magic.
Frank still doesn't know where they're supposed to go. Like, she's got this map and she says that she'll direct them. And he's like, okay, sure. But he wants money for it. And this guy, Nilo, owns all the boats. And so they sort of do a... which who is Paul Giamatti's character.
Yeah.
So they sort of do a dodgy and...
he's like the local kingpin.
Take off. Yeah. Like a mafia lord.
He's like a gangster.
He is. He's totally a gangster.
And he's not in it for very long.
No.
But G does a good job.
Yeah, he's great.
Everything he touches turns to gold, that man. Yeah.
So we have right there. So the first like action sequence we have is Lily escaping Prince Joachim. Joachim. Prince Joachim. Because I want to say, because it's spelled like Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah.
But that's not how you say it. So my brain doesn't compute. So I'm not being ignorant. I'm just like, every time I look at the name, my brain says Joachim, but that's not how you say it. Yeah, so the first action scene sequence that we get is her escaping with the with the arrowhead, and then this next action sequence that we get is them sort of running away from the leopard that's Frank's cat, Frank's pet on the boat. Proxima is the leopard's name, and then we get this big action sequence of her trying to get back on the boat as they're leaving.
Yeah,
so
it shows that she really loves for and cares for animals and nature by trying to free these animals that are all caged up on the docks. And she ends up getting sort of caught and taken away, breaks free. Then it's a whole
long
chase
extended
scene.
Extended action
Got
sequence.
Got to get back on the boat.
Chase scene.
Boat's already underway. Yeah. So it's up. Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Yeah. And throughout the journey on the boat, Lily is always trying to tell Frank how to do his job. You know, she wants to take the shortcut through the rapids. He says, this is a bad idea. She says, no, this is what I want to do. I can do it. Lily can't swim. This is a really important plot point that comes up very early, is that she can't swim. She's very scared of the water and she can't swim. So a cruise on the water is probably not the best. On rapids is probably not the best thing for her.
But, yeah, she's kind of fearless, but at the same time she's got this inability to swim, which kind of, in the context of the place she's going to, is key information.
Yeah, absolutely. And throughout, as we're following Frank and Lily and McGregor down the river, we also have Prince Joachim, who's now got a submarine and has sort of veered off and is taking a different approach to getting the arrowhead, which is that he's going to let the conquistadors and Aguirre free, which he does. Using water from the river. He basically just lets the water in the cave and wakes them all up.
Yeah.
And then they're really, like, weird looking. So there's one that's, like, a bee man who's, like, dripping
got,
with
like,
honey and made of beehives, and one that's got snakes and...
Yeah.
It's just, they're just a bit weird and gross.
They're sort of...
Like monsters.
Monsters. They've kind of incorporated elements of the jungle into them.
Yeah.
And they all happen to be very different from each other.
Yeah.
It's interesting. But anyway, I wrote down here, a music for chase scene reminds me of Indiana Jones.
The whole movie reminds me of Indiana Jones.
You said, I guess Indy in many ways there was a lot of action sequences as well. So you have to have the music to go along with that.
Yeah.
I wonder if it was written by the same people. Anyway, that's where that fun fact should be. No, anyway, moving on. So, yeah, great music. Definitely Indiana Jones.
Yeah. As the story progresses, we find out more about Frank's character, that he has looked for this tree in the past.
Mm.
We find that he's looked for it and he's given up. So he is convinced that it's not there because he knows the river better than anyone.
Mm.
And he has been up and down this river in all parts of the river, and it is not there. And we see that a whole lot of maps and everything that he's got when Lily's snooping and she's not supposed to be.
Mm. And there's also on board his boat, he's got photographs and stuff of like old cars and things like that, which is, you know, kind of gives a few clues to his... you know, his backstory and his interests.
Yeah.
You know, I guess he'd love to be an English gentleman driving in a car himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
So you do wonder why he stayed doing this job which becomes clearer. I do like the scene that they have with the tradespeople. They call them the tradespeople, who are like this local tribe of people that live just off the river. Mm. And we see McGregor get this face tattoo and everything, and they're all really calm and relaxed and happy and on their way, and everyone's happy until the conquistadors and Aguirre rock up where they are trying to get this arrowhead off of Lily. And during that, Frank falls to his death. Yeah. During that fight scene.
Disney falling death.
Falling death. They love a falling death.
And I thought, oh, we've still got an hour to go in this movie, so you can't be dead yet.
And through that, we learn later as they're on their journey that they find Frank. He's still alive. How could he be alive? Well, he's part of the curse.
Yes, he's one of the conquistadors.
Well, he was their cartographer, so he made the map. So the map that Lily's got to show the river system and the landmarks, that's Frank's map. Yeah. He drew that map.
Yeah.
So he's not a bad guy. He got roped into this with the others, and he is cursed. He's 400 years old, and he's cursed that he has to stay by the river. That's why he's never left. So he's got to stay in sight of the water.
We also learn through this that actually he's had many pet tigers over the years as well. Because obviously leopards.
Yeah.
Because obviously they don't last forever.
No.
In much the same way as a dog might pass away. He's outlived them all, and he's had many proximas over the years.
Yeah, and it's Frank. Frank was the one that trapped them in the cave.
Yeah.
So they are after him for other reasons. So there's lots of a good thing about this movie, I suppose, is there's multiple levels of villain.
Yeah.
In this, so we've got.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, and you've got Aguirre and the conquistadors who are after Frank first and foremost because. They're angry at him for trapping them in the cave. Mm. They're after Lily because they want to be free of the curse. They want the arrowhead that she's got around her neck. And then you've got Prince Joachim. So I did that. Sorry, I know I say that really slowly every time because I've got to do it in my head. Prince Joachim, who is also after them for the arrowhead. So they've got three different groups of people that are all after this one thing and are racing to get there first.
Yeah. They end up working out where the bottom of the river is.
Yeah.
And the entrance. Because
it's not where they thought it was.
No.
So they were going in the wrong, looking at the wrong thing.
And so Lily and Frank are able to reveal the entrance, and they're able to open it up.
And in doing so, Lily has to face her fear of water.
Yeah.
And she's got to swim. And Frank is passing her air via his mouth.
Yeah, bit of mouth to mouth.
A bit of mouth to mouth action. I think that's my favourite scene in the whole.
Yeah.
In the whole movie is where they're because that's really got like it feels like a very high stakes scene.
Yep. And she does get trapped in there underwater.
Yeah.
So
and as someone,
that would be your worst fear.
Oh my gosh, it's horrific.
Probably from any person that goes in the water, but especially someone who can't swim.
Yeah. She's going to drown. She can't breathe.
Yeah.
It's not like she's just stuck there. She's going to die. Yeah. You can't breathe under there. Like, that's just, that was really anxiety-inducing, that scene.
Out of all the threats in the movie, that's probably the most real for your everyday person or people watching it. That's the one that everyone's going to be able to probably empathise with the most.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm.
I like when they get into the cave where they find the tree. Lily's drained the waterfall. They've gotten in. Joachim has found them. Prince Joachim's found them. And the tree is dead.
Yeah.
Not alive. Just dead.
Yeah. Dying.
Just dead. There's nothing on there. There's no leaves. There's nothing. The tree is there. But there's leaves.
Yeah, it is too. Yeah, yeah.
There's no leaves or anything on the tree.
And there you sort of get a almost Da Vinci Code kind of. They've got to work out what the symbols mean and how they can, they've got to use their brains to be able to finish this last piece.
Yeah.
I guess throughout it, they've kind of used their street smarts and wits, a lot of bravery, a lot of physicality to get down the river with all of the threats and so forth, but now it relies on them being able to have the smarts to decode and understand and yeah, get the tree to work.
Yep.
And they do.
And they do.
Yeah.
The tree works.
Spoilers!
But the tree doesn't work for a very long time.
No.
While it's up in the moonlight, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then and then when the moon moves, it just dies?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yep.
Yep, yep. Like, so they've got a really narrow
window.
You know, window of opportunity to make this thing happen. And so as the moon starts to go out of view of this tree, the leaves start to die and fall off. Of course, all the magic starts disappearing.
Yeah.
Then we get another race to get to the...
Of course, the last remaining petal.
Yeah, and so they're up there in the tree. Lily's madly racing up there.
They've left McGregor behind by this point. They got rid of him earlier.
Yep.
He was a dead weight.
Well, he got captured, I think, didn't he, by...
He did get Prince captured by the tradespeople and they left... Oh, yeah, he does get... Yeah, so he's kidnapped by the tradespeople earlier.
And he's brought along and Prince, he's there kind of... Yeah,
they leave him behind and then Prince Joachim comes across him and brings him with them.
And so, yeah, anyway, we get another sort of chase scene, another fight scene. Conquistadors rock up. You know, it's all happening. I wrote for a limited time only.
Yes.
Yeah, and so then, of course, it all starts to get wrapped up really quickly as well, because this is the end of the movie. So
thank God, because we've been watching it now for a really long time.
McGregor punches Prince Joachim. Then it's really interesting. Spoilers, Prince Joachim is killed by a giant falling rock. It just goes boom and falls on him.
Oh, yeah, he does start to
see. And it's just like...
There's like a lot of death in this movie.
Yeah. I mean, you don't see any blood and gore or anything like that.
It's true Disney in that respect. It's still dark.
But it's kind of a very dark way to die.
Yeah.
It's almost comedic in the way that it happens. But, you know, at the same time, yeah, he's dead. There's a dude that's dead.
He gone.
Anyway, I guess at that stage you've probably, you know, it's justifiable because... We see him as being the ultimate villain there, I guess, and no one's upset that he's died.
Yeah.
So Frank crashes the boat, crumbling the entrance. The pillars start falling down, cutting off the river.
So this is important because that means that
the conquistadors
are going to be trapped. But in turn,
I wrote down. And I underlined it and with exclamation mark, things dried up really quick.
They did.
Like, that was magical.
With the conquistadors and Aguirre being trapped once again by this curse, that means that Frank is going to be trapped as well.
Mm.
So he's not going to survive this curse. He's going to be, trapped up. And he does. He gets trapped up against the wall because they need to follow the river.
Yeah.
And when the river recedes, they can't go any further. Yeah. They can't go anywhere.
They become part of the wall.
Yeah.
And, of course, Lily's got this one last petal.
Which she gets, yep.
And so then becomes that, you know, we often see this as, like, the ultimate test in stories is that she's got the exact thing that she set out to achieve. She's got the petal. It's the magic petal. It's the last one. And she could take this...
Is the tree wrecked? Does something happen to the tree?
I think so. Like, it's virtually done.
Okay.
And I think, basically, she could take that back to sunny old England and, you know, live out her days very rich with this beautiful, wonderful magic. And
have it studied, have it replicated,
But instead, she chooses to use it to release Frank.
For love. That was the wrong
choice.
From
the curse because she has... Caught feelings.
Yep, she's developed.
Caught the feels.
Developed feels for him as the movie has gone along.
Yeah, so anyway, conquistadors are out. Yeah, Joachim's been squished.
McGregor's cool.
McGregor's all back to normal. Ding.
And now Frank has been.
He's been.
Released
he's good.
From the curse.
Yeah, so.
Happy days.
All three of them there together, sitting around going, what do we do now? And then we have a final scene. And it's interesting, too, because, to be honest, they probably could have done without the final scene, but they went with it anyway. I guess it takes us back to where Lily and McGregor started back in England at the Historical Society, where he tells them to bugger off. Lily becomes a full professor at Cambridge.
Oh, fancy.
Talk about name dropping. Frank also returns with them, and we see them all get into a car, a fancy car, and he's all dressed up like a statesman, and they drive off together. And it's a happy ending.
Yeah.
Yeah. Adventurous choral music plays.
Oh, was that the subtitles?
Yeah.
Adventurous choral music.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Yeah. I love having the subtitles on because it tells you things that you don't even realise. It's mainly for, like, the best part is for sound effects or types of music. It tells you, and it's quite funny, yeah.
So we started with so we never used to watch things with subtitles, but we started in 2020 when we were watching Outlander because I could not understand a single word they were saying with that Scottish accent. I thought it was just a Scottish accent. It wasn't. It was the fact that they were using Scottish words.
Yeah.
And then I didn't know what they meant. Yeah.
Of the period.
And now I just keep subtitles on for everything. I love them. I wish that we could put them on in movie theatres. I wish you could ask them to put. There must be some for
you
like.
You need special glasses that you put on and it shows people. You the subtitles.
No, I just need to go
so
to.
So that
the,
only you see the subtitles.
No, I just need to go to the sessions for hearing impaired people and they can play the movie and put the subtitles on.
You are hearing impaired sometimes.
Oh, sometimes. Well, not as much as you. Now, but never mind.
A couple of the actors we haven't really mentioned, Prince Joachim, or whatever his name is.
Joachim
is played by Jesse Plemons, and he's been in quite a few things. But
he's always the villain,
but
he always
plays a guy that's, whether he's the villain or not, he always plays someone who's really intense. He's got a quiet intensity about him, which he plays in this movie
really
well.
He's married to Kirsten Dunst.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. They're either married or they've been together for a really long time. I don't remember which one, but yeah. He's with Kirsten Dunst.
We also have Edgar Ramirez, who plays, what's his name?
Aguirre.
He's like the head conquistador dude. Does an excellent job of it.
He's CGI'd for most of it.
Yeah, but you still got to have the expression and everything like that.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, most of it's him, so he does a really good job too. I think that was a really perfect casting, actually, of this movie.
Yeah, it was
really good.
Good
job. Yeah, also things like, you know, the leopard, we would assume is fully CGI.
Yeah,
and
I would think so.
And it still looks really plausible, really good. Mm-hmm. You know, it's good top quality Disney money there.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, you know, being set in the jungle, it's very scenic as well. I really love that their attention to detail with the scenery and the colour choices, you know, very vibrant. Music's great. What a great movie.
Yeah.
So, I think that brings us to about the end.
I think so. Well, I don't think that there's much else to say about it. Like, it's a good action-adventure film. It feels very Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
As you're watching it. And I think that even we may have made that comment while we were watching it in the cinema, that it feels like Indiana Jones. Now, I haven't seen, what was the movie, The African Queen? I haven't seen that, so no. I can't compare this to that movie. But I think that, it definitely feels like Indiana Jones as you're watching it. Even the music choices, the cinematography, especially the, like, chase scenes, the action sequences. If you're an Indiana Jones fan, I think you'll like it.
Yeah, definitely.
Having said that, Indiana Jones has a feeling of realism because there's not all CGI in Indiana Jones.
Like, no, definitely
all
not as much.
Real, oh, especially not in the old movies anyway. We're not talking about Crystal Skull.
No, it wasn't like so much CGI, Raiders, but it was practical effects.
Yeah, practical effects for sure. But I think that this movie, there's just always a danger when you're mixing CGI and real life people that there's just moments where it doesn't gel particularly well, where it looks fake, where it really stands out that's not real. But I don't know how there's no solution to that. It's just two different mediums coming together.
I think for this, in this instance, all of the close-up stuff's great.
Yeah.
Like you said, the leopard and everything like that. Anything that's really close up, all of the conquistadors, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, but they still look cartoony.
But it's for me, it's probably more when they pan out and you see these big swaths of jungle it's all CGI.
Yeah.
As good as they look, they still don't look like quite real.
Yeah, it's like when we were watching the live action Dumbo and everything was filmed on a green screen and it didn't feel real.
Yeah.
Like it feels cartoony when you're watching it. I didn't feel that so much with the scenery. I just found it with, you know, the CGI characters. You know, we watched Avatar recently and it has the same sort of vibe. Not the new one. The new one's great. But the first one, which is set half in like reality and half in Pandora. And when you're in Pandora for a while and you cross back to reality, it feels like a punch in the face. It's like, whoa, that's different. Like you don't realize until you're crossing between the two. I think that that's kind of how it feels a little bit with some parts of this where, and there's nothing against the effects because the effects are so good.
Yeah.
But they don't look like real life. Mm. They don't look like a real things, you know, even like the piranhas in the water. Do they look good? Yeah, they look great, but they don't look like real piranhas. You know, it's just, and I think that there's just always, you always run that risk when you've got real people interacting with CGI characters that it feels a bit like abrupt when you're watching it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. All right. So, let's wrap it up.
Okay. So, how many fake leopards would you give this movie?
Ooh, well, I'm going to go 7.5.
Oh.
I think it's a really good, strong... Oh, no, I'm even going to go 8. I'm going to get 8.
Wow, that's a good score.
Yeah, it's a very good movie. Very, very good movie. Yes. Entertaining, well worth a watch. Good to put on in the background and rewatch it a few times.
Yeah.
Watch it with your kids.
Scary. Don't watch it with your kids. It's scary.
Just cover their eyes when Prince Joachim gets squished by the rock.
Yes.
Not Dwayne Johnson, the rock, but
no,
the other
but
rock.
The other rock, the actual rock.
That'd be funnier, actually. But anyway, so...
I think that Dwayne Johnson becomes a rock in this.
Quite ironically, yeah. How many hearts of the moon would you give it?
7.
7?
Yeah.
Solid.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was a fine movie. I didn't dislike it. And like I said, I liked it much more the first time I saw it.
Yeah.
And then I think that on subsequent rewatches, it just feels long.
Yeah.
It just gets a bit, all the action sequences, it just feels a bit long.
Yeah. I don't know whether we've said it. I got to say this.
Okay.
Emily Blunt, strong female lead.
Yeah,
love
she's great.
It. And she's a fantastic actress.
However, we'll say it, the only female lead character in this movie.
There weren't
otherwise
many females in it at all.
All men. All men. And she's the only
Is that the
female
trade-off
lead.
If you have a female
if
lead,
you've got to have an Emily Blunt.
Yeah, you've got to have all men.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's just, and I get the point of it, but there's no other female characters. I think there are some female tradespeople when you cross
to
them.
Yeah, but it's not really a big thing, is it?
No, but I think that maybe that the point is that she's a woman living in this man's world.
Yeah.
She's trailblazing in this male-driven world. So I understand the point.
Yeah.
I just would have maybe perhaps... This movie does not pass the
Bechdel
test.
All of the bad guys are men.
It's because all of the characters are men.
Except for her. Which came first? The men characters or the men bad guys?
I'm sure this movie must have been written by men. I'm sure of it. But, yeah, I mean, it's good. It's a 7. It's entertaining. If you haven't seen it, it's worth watching.
Yeah.
It's good.
Who would you watch it with, honey?
Not your kids. It's too scary.
I would watch it with your kids.
I'm sure you would.
It's the least violent movie around they've probably seen.
A rock squashes him.
Yeah, but like it's kind of funny.
But he deserves it, so it's okay.
He does deserve it.
He
did shoot at them with machine guns.
Yes,
so
I forgot about the machine guns.
Yeah, he kind of deserves it,
that's
I guess.
Full on. Yeah.
An eye for an eye sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway.
All right. That wraps up. Any other thoughts?
Oh, nah.
Nah. All right, so that wraps up our first episode of season 4, Jungle Cruise.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for tuning in and listening. We really appreciate it. If you could rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and like us on Instagram to get all updates about what the show is doing. We are trying to be more active on social media. It's hard, but we are trying. Just rate, review, and subscribe is really, really helpful. It helps people find the podcast. It's kind of like tipping a waiter or a waitress if you think they're doing a good job. It's 15%. Really, really helpful. Yeah, do it 15 times. Thank you. But, yeah, I think that's about it.
Yeah.
Anything you want to add?
Nah.
All right. See you next time.
Good to be back.
Bye.
Bye. We also have Edgar Ramirez. He plays...
Edgar Ramirez.
What did
not
I say?
Ramirez. Edgar Ramirez.
Edgar... We also have Edgar...
Edgar Ramirez.
Edgar. We also have Edgar Ramirez.
Ramirez.
What? What's wrong with Ramirez?
That's not how you say it.
We also have Edgar Ramirez. I'm going to put this in the outtakes.